What's up, everybody? Corey Vincent from the Video Game Bang, presented by NerdReactor.com, and I am so excited for this episode, you have no idea. This is an episode that is going to cater specifically to those gamers that want to get a look behind the veil of game creation and development. I have two phenomenal guests that span the gambit. Our first interview will be with Zach Truscott. He is the game developer, main dude at Cyber Heist. And we're going to get an update with him, see how Cyber Heist did. It's award-winning, very innovative title that really captured our attention. And he's a great guy. We're going to talk to him after the break. We have a big interview with Raphael Van Lierop. It's another follow-up to another independently run game called The Long Dark, which has just hit last week, actually, on Steam in early access. And it's through the roof. It's got a lot of attention. Hit the top 10 games instantly. Personally, knowing what's about to come on this episode, this has climbed to be one of my favorite episodes of all time. I really think you guys are going to enjoy it as well. We have Jada, Aaron, so much to do, so much to talk about, all on this week's Bang.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Video Game Bang. Video Game Bang. Your weekly source for all things video game. Featuring your fearless hosts, Corey Vincent.
I'm pretty much Microsoft and Marvel. The cans are on. It's when the issue gets real. I don't get shot during the day.
And Aaron Carter.
Buy the armor, I equip it, and it's like Pink Thong. The guy that delivers vending machine items in my job. He can play the Rhino.
Fill up your Mountain Dew and grab your Doritos. It's time for Video Game Bang.
What is up, my video game developer pizzas? My name is Corey Vincent, and you are listening to the Video Game Bang, brought to you by NerdReactor.com. And if you notice the music in the little intro part was different, it's because we have sort of partnered with a awesome YouTuber. His name is Rakohus.
Rakohus?
Rakohus. Rakohus. I don't know
how to say house.
It. Rock the house. I don't know. But he does some amazing 8-bit conversion music magic stuff that I don't even begin to know how it works. But I quite enjoy it. Did you enjoy it, Aaron?
Yes, I did, actually. Good. I like 8-bit music. Good. I love 8-bit music.
If we were Cheech and Chong, he would be Tommy Chong, Aaron Carter.
I don't know which one that is.
That's the one that talks really slow.
Don't they both talk really slow?
No, man. One talks like this.
And that's extremely racist.
It is. It is very, but that's Cheech.
Yeah. I never watched any of their movies.
Oh, man.
I've only seen Born in the East LA, which wasn't a Cheech and Chong movie, but it was a
Cheech Marin movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember that. I think that was like one of my earliest movies I've ever seen, literally.
She would be a Bong. Jada is here.
Hello, everybody.
Wow.
The Bong's just as much a character.
Yeah, I guess so.
In those movies. Or that big joint. Jada has some news, or we have some news about Jada. Jada has been accepted into the Nerd Reactor family. Welcome aboard.
Woo!
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's been a long time coming.
The hard work paid off.
Yes.
You've been to E3 with us. You were, and that was on your own accord.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You recently covered Kraken Con single-handedly.
Yep, yep. Awesome time there.
You actually had some really good articles, too. We'll talk about that. You had, who did you meet? You actually had, like, an impromptu interview, right?
So, yeah, I did a little short impromptu interview with Nikki Rapp. She did a lot of voices for The Sims, as well as Lily in The Walking Dead.
Now, is she in Sims 4 as well? Like
she
the newest
didn't,
one?
Is not in Sims 4, just 2 and 3. But
I decided to cut her out of 4.
Yeah, yeah. I think she walked away at the right time because I've been hearing some pretty crappy reviews about Sims 4.
About 4, really?
Yeah,
they
4,
took away features.
Yeah, there's a lot of features. 4 has not been reviewing as well as the older ones.
You're going to add them in on 5, that's fine.
Always.
You also did another article for... Oh, this one was like the Tug at the Heartstrings one.
Yeah, I did the a little piece on Kate Von Roeder, a transgendered game developer who sadly took her life. At the beginning of the month.
That was, I actually read the goodbye letter or whatever on Facebook, and then the tweet, it was all so eerily nonchalant.
The tweet?
Yeah.
Well, the tweet was a link to...
Well, no, but the tweet, the way it was worded, you wouldn't think that was a link to a suicide note. That was a very, like...
It was a very...
Calm like a bomb. If I could steal from Rage Against the Machine.
That's terrible.
but yeah, awesome piece. Go to NerdReactor.com, check out Jada's articles. We have stuff coming up. Aaron and I, starting a little YouTube series. It might be a one and done. I don't know. But we got to review The Booty Bin. Just me and Aaron shared some booty yesterday.
That's where it's going right there.
Booty Bin is kind of like Loot Crate, except like the premium version. This one costs $50 a month as opposed to like $20. And it's not a subscription. You have to buy it per month. And I was impressed by what was in it.
Which is, I would say, to not even skip past the subscription thing, is a little less contracty, I guess.
Yeah, it doesn't feel as seedy because, like, I'm pissed that Loot Crate has my email. I went through, hey, listen, babe, we had 3 good months together.
Wow.
And I'm done with you.
That's all you did was 3 months?
I just did 3 months.
I think I did 5.
It was cheaper that way, but more in the long run. I think that's what tricked you.
Well, no, I just liked getting the stuff. I didn't care.
Well,
I wasn't even looking at the money.
We opened both boxes.
Yes, we did.
And we've done a lot of Loot Crates. But the Loot Crates, to me, the word I use to describe them is like tchotchkes.
I don't know what that means.
It means like knickknacks, doodads. Like when you open a Loot Crate, you open it up and go, oh, that's a cool little knickknack. You know, it's like little tiny things.
Okay. Something that's going to wind up in a box somewhere back in the Loot Crate and in the closet.
Just swag, basically.
Not even swag.
Not even swag?
Tchotchkes.
I wouldn't use
tchotchkes. Come on, tchotchkes.
No.
Hashtag tchotchkes, if you know what I'm talking about.
And you're going to get one hashtag from some guy in like the Midwest.
It's not a Midwest word. I think it's like a Jewish word or something. I don't know.
Wow.
It's European.
Yeah, whatever. But this had legitimate items in it. Like, it had full-blown graphic novel.
Yeah, a full volume.
You had a little robot.
Yeah, if that's what you want to call it. I actually activated it today for the first time, and it seems like it has a mind of its own.
Did it tell you it loves you?
It told me no such a thing. It's a vibrator, everybody.
Did it try and crawl up your butt?
No, it didn't. It falls on its back, and then it'll just right itself up and then keep moving.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah, it's a hexic bug thing. I don't know. I was impressed.
Oh,
we're gonna Yeah, we're going to have a video up fairly soon. And we hope you guys enjoy it. It was fun to do.
Real quick, the old comics, did you read yours?
I haven't read it yet.
So
I'm
afraid
to touch it.
I read part of mine. And first of all, it smells like the 70s. that's one, no lie. When you open the pages, it's like, whoa, this is
so
straight
this is
out of...
this is legitimately old comics.
Yeah,
this isn't
is
a reprint.
Straight out. No, this is straight out of the 70s. And the black characters in there are straight out of the 70s.
That's how we decided who got it, because we got one Thor comic and one Captain America, but on the bottom of the Captain America it said, wow, you're not going to want to miss when Black Panther meets the Falcon.
Yeah.
Guess what they're going to talk about? And it's like the only two black characters in Marvel.
Yeah, pretty much.
What are they going to talk about?
And I know what they talk about.
Jerry Curl Juice.
No, they don't. I actually tell you the God honest truth, Black Panther is only in 2 panels.
Aww.
Just a little spoiler. And then Falcon is literally only probably on... first 2 pages.
What did they meet about? Was it about the Black Panther party?
No, it was about Falcon and his inability to be effective superhero next to Captain America. The comic starts with the Falcon getting hit by a car and then jumped by 3 black guys.
Wow.
Yeah. And then Captain America. Now this is...
Does he say jive turkey?
No, there's no jive or in there. It's weird. The language is definitely, you can tell it's old, but the funny thing is, so he gets hit by a car and the black guys jump out to beat him up because they belong to some mobster who they're like, if you're not going to work for us, then he wants you dead. Okay. It's a cool storyline. All right. It's a decent, you know, Captain America comes out of Black Falcon's apartment because they were meeting over there or whatever. And Black Falcon was, you know, or Black Falcon. Falcon was just on his way.
Wow. Falcon Freudian was just, slip, you racist.
Falcon was on his way home. And that's when all this stuff occurred. So Captain America comes out of the apartment. He sees Falcon getting jumped in the street, right?
Yeah.
And he's still dressed as Steve Rogers. He's not... So he runs back into the apartment. He changes into the Captain America outfit. Runs to the roof of the apartment And then dives down and jumps into the fight.
Wow. How many panels did this take?
Like, I swear to you. Yeah, and that's all 3 pages of Falcon getting whipped up on.
See, I was expecting a lot more jive in there. Not because I'm racist. No, but really because I expected, like, old racist Stan Lee at the time, who was probably writing it, to be like, and then the Black Panther's going to say, you jive turkey.
No, no. So the racism comes within the form of the black-on-black crime that happens. And Falcon not being able to really fight. He doesn't have wings.
So what's the point?
He has the bird, and the bird, you see the bird scratching somebody in the background, but he's still getting beat up and hit over the head. Wow. And
Booty Bin, people, go check it out.
Yeah, no, right?
I have something. It's not necessarily game-related. I mean, I know we only talk about video games on this podcast.
Have you listened to The Weekend Bang?
Yes. Well, we talk about television.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's...
The last Weekend Bang, we talk about fall TV. And I liked it. We got some good reviews on that one.
Nice, nice.
But have you ever been a best man in a wedding or a maid of honor?
Yep.
Jada?
Nope.
Nope. You have?
Yeah.
And
Dominique Downs.
Oh, you were.
I was the best
see,
man.
Dominique, he's crazy.
He's crazy?
He's a crazy person.
Okay.
How was the bachelor party?
Actually, I don't think I went to the bachelor party.
And you were a best man?
I don't think, because it was kind of quick. It wasn't,
okay.
It wasn't like we had a long time to plan.
I imagine
all this.
Dominique would have a very crazy...
If, yes, yes.
Stripper.
There would be...
The hangover.
Stripper clowns. like a merger of two, yes.
Come on, player.
Yeah, it would be crazy. But no, it was very fast. It wasn't... there wasn't enough time for everything, so...
I was invited to... I'm best manning a wedding. Co-best manning. Because
co-best manning.
This is my childhood friend.
No.
Like, we were childhood...
I don't care.
We were five. We were good friends. And
so
then
three of you, I'm guessing, then, were childhood friends.
No, no, here's the thing. All then, right. Like, we get a little older. We grew apart. He was wild. You know, he was doing things like smoking the pot.
That's wild.
And that kind of stuff. Yeah, like, that's okay. Wild for me.
Okay, I mean, all right.
Come on, Aaron. You're the...
I live cleaner, around nothing but...
But you're cleaner than me.
Yeah, but I live around all
know,
that stuff.
I know, and I
dealt
with
wild.
It, but I didn't... I dealt with it. I wasn't like, oh, I can't hang out with him because he does that. It
okay,
was just like,
okay.
I just chose not to because that's what he did a lot. And I was like, I don't need to be around it.
You have to know the evil.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Okay, Batman. So... You know, it's been some time. We get together. We still call each other best friends after all this time, and it's still true. You know, I got...
Does David know about this?
Don't tell David.
Wow.
But I'm invited to this bachelor party that's going to be on Friday, and I'm actually kind of nervous because I haven't put myself in that situation in a long time.
Here's what you do. You roll a couple of joints.
I don't know how.
You keep them in your lapel.
And I'm going to be wearing a tux?
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
It's a crazy party.
Okay.
It's a crazy party. You show up. And then you see that he's actually converted. he's the most clean-cut guy you've ever seen.
No,
then
I'm sorry. It's not going
to
happen.
So have you been to a bachelor party?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, I don't think you're going to... Okay.
Well, I mean, there's different. There's like
there's ones.
Good,
though, yeah,
there's
yeah.
good, wholesome, honest fun. Like, we're going to go to a strip club. But then there's like, we're going to go smoke some weed. And then we're going to go do this.
I don't get the best man thing.
Well, I mean, I was his best friend during a stage of his life, and then
and that's when I would bring both of you two, throw a knife in the middle, and say there can be only one.
I wasn't offended. I don't care. And you know, the fucked up part is, honestly, my mistake is that, you know, we weren't talking a lot at the time where I got married, and he wasn't in my wedding party.
Wow.
So I carry a lot of guilt going into
what
this.
A douche.
I know, really. I feel like a douche. I
means you better set up an awesome bachelor party.
Yeah, are you a part of
setting it up?
No,
or...
I'm not. His,
so the other best man
yeah,
is doing
I
that.
I couldn't even begin to fathom throwing that type of an event. And, like, I don't know whether I should go alone or whether I need to bring... Aaron, will you go with me as backup?
What?
I need backup.
You need backup for a bachelor party.
Yeah.
Where is it? Do you even know where it's at? Is that a hotel?
It's going to start at the other best man's house, and then it's just going to kind of go from there. But... Oh, man.
It didn't even interrupt anything.
Damn.
This time.
Kinda... Oh, no, it interrupted
the thought process
of What You're Playing. Now, we failed to mention that this is going to be the game developer episode. So after this round of What You're Playing, we're going to have a great interview. I just know it's going to be great with Zach Truscott. He's the game developer, main guy behind Cyber Heist, a game that we talked about back in the early days of Cyber Heist. And he's been a friend of the show.
I think March 24th, if you want to be... 100%
wow.
accurate.
Yeah. Are you looking at it right now?
No. I looked at it earlier.
Oh. And then followed by, after the break, we have a long extended interview with Raphael Van Lierop from Hinterland Games, and we're talking about The Long Dark. So that's going to be very exciting. So we're going to do a speed round of What You're Playing, because we don't have much time. Jada, what have you been playing?
Smash Brothers for the 3DS. And League of Legends again. Yay!
Is Smash Brothers fun?
I enjoy it, but there's some mechanics that I don't like that they changed.
Okay, we'll have to get to that another time. Aaron Carter, what are you playing?
Smite.
Smite.
Like a lot of Smite, actually, wow. Yeah.
I'm still playing Sleeping Dogs, trying to get through that review. And
FIFA. Destiny. You're playing FIFA,
oh,
too.
Oh, FIFA. Yeah,
yeah, I'm whipping you
talk
up
about
in FIFA.
FIFA.
Yeah.
All right, and without much further ado, we have him on the horn right here, live via the magic of Skype. His name is Zach Truscott, and he is the director of Cyber Heist. And welcome back to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. It's really good to be back.
So last time we spoke, Cyber Heist was just officially coming out. It was still, it wasn't on Desura yet, right?
Right. We were just getting ready to publish.
And what's been the difference since you've actually published?
We've had a lot of players, a lot of feedback. It's been really awesome. We've been reviewed by Kotaku and Polygon and some great places. You guys have pushed our game quite a bit, which thank you so much, by the way. And we've actually so far been awarded like 5 different awards. We got the IGF Student Finalists. We got the Microsoft Imagine Fund. We were finalists in the Utah Game Wars, which was really cool. We were also finalists in the Intel Student Game Competition.
Wow.
And got to do a big presentation to Intel, and that was really neat. And the last one, we were finalists in the Unity 2014 Awards. So we got to go up to Seattle, show off the game again on the floor, and be a part of that. And
it's
been awesome.
That's like almost living the dream right there. So I remember when we were talking, you were saying that the team wasn't quite sure, you know, they might split, go their separate ways after you guys graduated or however that was going to go when the project was over. But with all the success, was it enough to hold most of you guys together?
It's not quite. We haven't really gotten a whole lot of money from any of the awards, sadly. It's been really great, like publicity and building a community, but since then we all ended up graduating from the program at the University of Utah for the Entertainment Arts and Engineering program, which little shout out to how awesome that program is. I really loved it, and we're top 3 in the nation still, so it's pretty exciting. But apart from that, we kind of all went our separate ways over the summer, got different jobs across the United States and different companies, and but even with that, we're all still so passionate and dedicated to this program, or sorry, to this game, that we've been doing a lot of remote call-in and Skyping and Google Hangouts and working on it remotely. And our goal right now is to get up on Steam. So we're just about Steam ready.
Wow. So,
how
did that come about? Like, how do you get onto Steam? Is it difficult to get there?
It kind of is. It's a big process with getting through Greenlight and once you're greenlit, then making sure your game gets enough hits, and then they eventually put you in, I guess. It's kind of a long process. So that's what we're about to start, is that process.
Wow.
So there was some little bugs and stuff that we decided to fix and a couple things to touch up before we put it out there to give us that better shot of getting into Steam. So
what's been the biggest difference you've actually made to the game itself since back in the day, like last time we spoke to now? Have you actually made big changes to the game that weren't there before?
The biggest change is levels and art, I would say, because originally we've only ever had one artist working on the game, which was crazy. And so he put a lot of time and effort into dressing up the levels. Our designer put a lot of time and effort into our artist was Damien Lyon, and our designer was Jake Mealy. And anyway, Jake put a lot of time into making the levels seem right, getting tutorials correctly or filled correct, and all that. And so they worked a lot together. And so I would say a lot of it is we redesigned our levels, we dressed them up, and really up to the quality of the art, mostly. And gameplay wise, just, you know, tuning. So getting the run to feel right, and getting all the little bugs out, and things like that.
Have there been any other opportunities that have like came up because of this? Like Cyber Heist winning awards. I mean, it doesn't seem like every game's winning that many awards. Have you gotten interest from other people? Like,
yeah, we've had some interest from Xbox. We talked to some people there. Hasn't gone anywhere yet. So we're considering doing an Xbox version and getting onto their Indie Live or something. I can't remember what it's called for Xbox. And we have we actually submitted again to the IGF main competition to see if we can maybe win in that one. And we also submitted to Serious Games Showcase. So we're still putting it out there. We still feel really strongly it's a very innovative game. And more than just being passionate about it, we think the game has this – we have this idea that it's kind of its own genre in a way that games – for like it's a branch of co-op is what I would call it, like an asymmetrical co-op genre. So – we're really looking at those ideas and maybe thinking of going further and trying something different, but in this kind of newish genre that we'd like to push.
You guys are definitely trendsetters, especially when it comes to that. Yeah. When you guys are going to different, are thinking about the different platforms, are you thinking about adding anything, you know, maybe something new specific to each platform, like with the indie games for the Xbox or the, you know, whenever you're Steam ready?
We're definitely, getting ready to put it on the iPad and release on the iPad also. It's mm-hmm. That's a little ways down the road for us. We're first going to go for Steam, but that's one thing that we're all really excited about because we've got a version for the iPad, but it's kind of its own process to get it out there. So we really want the hacker to be on that iPad because it's built around touch controls and it just makes sense. So that's kind of the one direction we want to change.
Now, you mentioned that your team was kind of growing, moving on, getting the you know, jobs at places anywhere that we'd heard of. Is there? Are you guys moving? Or what about you yourself? Have you been? Are you
just McDonald's?
I know. Sometimes it feels that way as an indie dev, right?
Well, I mean, you have like what I feel is on the cusp of being such a huge game. I mean, are you working 100% on Cyber Heist, or are you looking to, you know, apply for bigger companies and move towards that way?
Yes and no. So there's some of us have gone to like EA and some of us have gone to like the Disney Avalanche studio in Salt Lake and others. We got one guy in Chicago. And we've definitely kind of branched out and working on some different AAA companies. And some of us are working on some other indie companies. I think right now it's kind of like, well, we're done school. We need to make some money. And then let's decide where to go from there. And the other part is it gives us good experience, a little more cred. And since we're such newer game developers, I think it's good for us. You know, it gives us more experience. And so, we've all kind of done our thing. I'm right now actually working for a nonprofit organization called SpyHop, and we teach youth media. And so I'm teaching a game, like a year-long game development program for SpyHop. Wow. And it's going really, really well.
Now, what's the age group?
15 to 19, so teenagers.
Wow. How do I join this class? Wow.
Just come on over. It started this week. So.
Well, that's one of the things like people always toy with. And I know we do all the time because when we critique a game or when we're talking about a game, just hanging out as a crew, we're always thinking like, oh my gosh, this game has this, but if it would have just went the extra mile and added some of this, or why doesn't this game storyline branch like this? And then we always have that thought, we should make our own damn game. Like what, how do people, what's the key? Like if a bunch of guys, friends want to make a game, do you just make a game or do you have to go to school or what's the path?
You know what? I don't think there's a formula for it, especially, and that's kind of why I like this industry is there's no set path to making games, and there's no right way. There's no wrong way. There's just many ways. And I don't think you have to go to school. I think it's a great way to get a jump start and get a head start on learning, you know, about the industry, learning about, current practices of making games and stuff like that. But there's definitely people out there that didn't go to school and they made a game and maybe they took a couple programming classes and then went from there, you know. But I think I really like the route that I went, getting a master's in game design, because I really was able to understand really quickly how games are made. And I got to network. And that's the one thing that I thought was very valuable. I got a lot of networking, meeting people, and that really boosted my own career quickly. And so that's kind of way I took that way, but I don't think it's the only way.
Is there like any things you would say to stay away from, I guess, before you jump into the whole depths of game development?
Make sure you can support yourself so you can still eat. I don't know. I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but I really just play games, you know, look at them from a very more of a critical perspective than just the entertainment side, and find ways to innovate on them, and then test it, pursue that idea until it either dead ends or branches off into something better. Or, I don't know.
Why do you make games? Do you what drives you? Like, for some people, you know, it's clearly the money. For other people, it's the creative expression. You know, for you personally, what makes you want to make video games?
I just love making games. I actually have a bachelor's in mechanical engineering, and which is kind of a weird career branch, I'd say. But I was working with robots and building manufacturing equipment and all kinds of cool stuff. But for me, it just wasn't enough on the creative side, and I felt very restricted to like best practices and best standard. You know, use this bolt and this nut, put it together and move on. And that bugged me. And so I decided to change that. And I've always wanted to make games. And a little bit was, for me, was scared because I've always wanted to have a family, and I have a family. And so I was worried that I wouldn't be able to make money. And then when I realized how big the industry is and that you can make money in it, it was a no-brainer, and I went for it. And so for me, why I love it is I get to create worlds and experiences for people to play and to enjoy just as much as I do. So creating that experience for them is one thing I just love. And honestly, game development's so much fun. I mean, we're the nerds of the nerds, and we love it. And it's great to be able to express ourselves in such a cool medium that's growing. And it feels like it's only in its teenage years, right? This whole industry, yeah. But it's growing so fast and so quickly. And there's so many aspects to it that you can just really get in and kind of make your mark or go your path and make something great.
After this interview, we're going to have an interview coming up with Raph Van Lierop from Hinterland Studios, and they're producing the game The Long Dark. And he was a guy who went from AAA to indie to really like accentuate that creative drive and the stuff that he wasn't able to do. He wanted to be his own boss type of deal. Are you familiar with Hinterland, or do you have any thoughts on them?
Yeah, I've been following them for a bit now, and they are making some really cool stuff. I'm really excited to see what they're doing, and I love that they're pushing innovative. I love that that whole team has this passion towards what they're doing, and each one of them is, you know, putting their own self into it, and it's really becoming something. And I just watched their latest trailer, and it looks amazing. I'm excited. I think it's really cool that this team has so much experience. There's years and years, and there's big titles in that team, and they're all coming back to kind of revolutionize their own thing. And I think that's a big thing nowadays. I think there's a lot of people wanting to push the industry forward in a different way. And there's a lot of neat stuff coming out of it.
What do you think about the decision to go early access?
Just in general,
not necessarily with The Long Dark, but early access is kind of thing a lot of people have been talking about. Some people love it. Some people hate it. Where do you sit about that?
I think that's a tough decision. Sometimes that early access can kind of kill you in a way. And it's if people don't like it, I don't know if they're going to come back to it. But at the same time, I've seen early access really boost a game, and all of a sudden you have a community behind you before you've launched. And I don't know what's better than that. It really pushes you forward. So it's a 50-50. It's kind of that gamble. Is it going to give you what you want, or is it going to hurt you? And I think you have to be just very tread lightly in a way.
You got any aspirations for any big companies to buy out? Because you heard of the acquisition of Mojang, right?
Oh, of course, yeah. Is your question, I hope that another company does get bought out? Or,
yeah.
Where do you sit on that? Like, is that the end goal for a game developer? Or is that the ultimate win solution, or is there more to it? What do you think?
I think that's definitely some people's big goal. I mean, it definitely says something about the game. It definitely says, you know, how well it's done, and that there's that many people that really want it, and a company like Microsoft wants to buy you out. That means something. So that's cool. I think that's awesome, and that is kind of a big, you know, pat on the back saying, hey, you did a great job. I don't think it's everybody's end goal, but it sure is nice, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's cool. And I got to tell some stories real quick because we're winding down. Zach is one of the most stand-up gentlemen in the industry that I've come across so far. This man, you know, jumped at the opportunity to do the show the first time, you know, despite all the craziness going on and busyness with his game. And then not only that, sent us a little care package of t-shirts, Cyber Heist t-shirts that I wear to this day, and a handwritten note saying thank you to the Video Game Bang and all this awesome stuff. And so just in dealing with people, that's an awesome trait. And are you finding that same kind of generosity being given back to you in the industry?
You know, I find what goes around comes around. You know, it's the whole karma effect. And if you want to build a good reputation, or if you want to have people, you know, help you out along the way, you got to do the same for others. And you guys really, honestly, I sent that just because it was a thank you to you guys being such a small little dev group in Utah building this game that we're just hoping does, you know, makes a little wave or something for us. And you guys really pushed us and kind of backed us and pushed tweets for us and all kinds of stuff. And so, yeah, it was a no-brainer to just send something and just say thank you. And what else? What better than a shirt of Cyber Heist? Yeah. You know, so we were really excited to be on the show. And again, I'm you know, blown away that you're honored that you had me back on here.
Well, it's because we really believe in it, you know, and that's the thing that I'm finding is from top level people to, you know, just anybody, local cosplayers, that, you know, just you see the help in the community and people just want to work together. If you see something that you like or someone that you want to be successful, you retweet them, you tweet, you know, you promote the crap out of whatever they're doing because, you know, that's what you want done to you. You know, that's,
yeah. I totally agree. I that's my exact motto too. I think it's awesome.
Well, we want to thank you for coming back to the show. We're going to go to break after this. Please tell everybody where they can find Cyber Heist.
Cyber Heist is on Desura. Look us up. It's also cyberheistgame.com. You can get on our Facebook, Cyber Heist Game, and sheesh, I don't know where else. Just Google us and you'll find us. You can't miss us.
We'll put all the links in the description. Thanks to Zach. We'll be back after the break.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Hi, this is Amber Goldfarb, the voice of Aveline de Grand Prix, and you're listening to Video Game Bang.
Hello, this is Cass Anbar, Altair Ibn La'ahad from Assassin's Creed Revelation, and you are listening to the Video Game Bang.
This is Strife, the main guy behind Freedom Planet.
This is Commander Torque.
Hi, this is Lilac the Dragon Girl.
This is Spade.
This is Mayor Zhao.
This is Syntax.
Greetings, this is Lord Brevin, and you're listening to Video Game Bang.
Plus five, awesome.
Hey, man, I'm Kevin Smith.
Jason Mewes.
And you're listening to the Video Game Bang, which sounds a lot dirtier than it is.
This is Janice Davis, author of Holder's Dominion, and you're listening to Video Game Bang with superstar, incredibly charming hosts.
Hello, Super Aaron. Hello, Princess Cory. It's me, Mario. Woohoo! Mamma mia. You guys, number one. Woohoo!
All right, welcome back to the Video Game Bang, brought to you by NerdReactor.com. And as promised, and I always deliver, as Aaron will tell you.
No, I won't tell you that.
My nickname is DiGiorno. Wait.
Because it's the delivery? Oh. Not delivery, you mean?
That's terrible, my bad.
Yeah.
I don't eat much pizza. We got a special guest. He's been on the show once before, and this is back when the game was just an idea. It was still just
it was a little more than an idea.
Well, it was a Kickstarter. You know, it was still working on its funding. This guy came from a background of AAA titles. He formulated the Avengers of developers, and then they decided to go indie, and they call their studio Hinterland Games, working out of Canada. Please welcome back to the show for the second time our good friend Raph Van Lierop.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So a lot has happened. It's been 50 episodes since you've been on the show. We've kind of kept up through Twitter. The campaign, Freezing My Balls Off, went wild through the world. I don't want to
retweets. Yeah,
I don't want to say it made the game what it is right now, but
the game. Well, now that you've played the game, you can see how much of an influence that was for us.
There's snow. The game is amazing. Please just. For the people out there who don't know what The Long Dark is, so they must be new to this show because we talk about it all the time. Please tell them, in a nutshell, what's The Long Dark?
So The Long Dark is a first-person survival simulation set in, you know, what we call the northern wilderness. It's definitely influenced by where we live in sort of northwestern Canada. And in the story mode, you play William McKenzie, who's a bush pilot that crashes in the northern wilderness, you know, after this geomagnetic event. And you're kind of thrust into this, the immediate danger of a survival situation that you got to try to understand. And as you kind of explore the world and meet characters and kind of the story unfolds, you learn more about sort of how the world has changed as a result of this event. Story mode is something that, you know, we've really held under wraps because we don't want to, you know, we want to wait until it's all done and, you know, people can experience it for the first time when it's polished and ready to go. We also have launched on early access the sandbox mode of the game. We launched that on the 22nd, so it's been out for about 10 days now. And that is a non-narrative kind of freeform survival sandbox, essentially, with the objective being, you know, survive for as long as you can.
Now, you sent us the alpha code. You were very gracious in sending us the alpha code, so I got to get on the ground floor. And the game just gets constantly bombarded with updates, which is awesome. Now, is it just me, or did those wolves get a little less? Because when I first played, I was so frustrated because every time I turned around, a wolf was eating me.
Yeah, you know, it's been really interesting because we had the game in, you know, we could call it like a closed alpha with our Kickstarter backers. So we had the first group of backers playing back in June, and that was a small group, about 15 people, were the kind of, that was like the first sort of external playtest group that we had, and then we opened it up to our alpha backers and then our beta backers. So by the time, you know, August rolled around, we had about 1500 people playing the game already, and we were taking feedback from those people. And what happens is, when people get used to playing a game for a few months, you know, things that were hard when they started don't seem hard anymore, and you sort of end up tuning the game to that community of people. And I think we underestimated, by the time we came to early access and the people that were going to be playing it for the first time, kind of how hard it was going to be for them because they hadn't played it for the last 3 months, right? Yeah. So, you know, we launched it with, you know, tuned based on what we felt was right as a level of difficulty or level of challenge for the players that were going to be starting. And then, you know, we realized that we might have overdone it a little bit, and we had we had some bugs and things that made it, you know, it was interesting because we were, you know, people would be, you know, let's say it, a lot of people were complaining about wolves. They were like, there's too many of them and I can't understand how to fight them. And we were saying to them, well, you know, this is how you approach them. And, you know, as you guys, since you've played the game, you know that we don't, you know, one of our philosophies from the very beginning has been never to hold a player's hand. And we don't do tutorials and we don't give you a lot of information. We just throw you into the situation and we give you the info, like we give you the tools, we give you the data in the world and then through things like the survival panel and whatnot, so you can figure out what you need to do. But we don't tell you like, hey, this is how you do X and Y if you want to survive.
You guys do everything so, but hold hands. There's no hand holding in this game. It is you spawn in the middle of a very cold forest, and actually, I was given the benefit, and I think everyone has, because this happened both times I've played the game, when I played it first in alpha, and then when I played it after early access. It gave me that nice little spawn point next to a bunch of portable buildings. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, sweet, this game's going to be so easy. There's buildings right there, so I go into the buildings, scrounge what little things I can, go outside and die. And I was so pissed because then I respawned, like, and it was a more difficult location and I got killed. And I was like, man, if only, as I was learning this, I realized, I was like, if I could go back to that first spawn, I could live forever.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the game is, you know, it's a living thing now. Right. And so we're constantly tweaking it and playing with the dials, and there's a lot of depth to the simulation. There are hundreds and hundreds of different variables that we're always tuning to kind of, and you know, sometimes it's hard to know exactly what all the outcomes are going to be because the simulation is so complex. And
I have a bone to pick with you. I'm sorry. I forgot all about this. Okay, I'm playing The Long Dark. I find a big, like, industrial looking building. Uh-huh. And I'm like, oh god, I needed this because I just got attacked by a wolf. So I go in there, patch myself up, and I start going downstairs, and like, I check the building, it's secure, the windows are all in check. I go downstairs, and a wolf jumps me and murders me in the middle of this building. I want to know from you specifically, how did that wolf get there?
Did I put that in there?
Okay, so that wolf is called Fluffy. And we didn't coin the name Fluffy. The community called Fluffy Fluffy. I think of it as a her, so I call her Fluffy now. And there's, you know, it's, she's kind of taken off as her own meme around the Long Dark. Like, she has, like, someone made a Twitter account for Fluffy. It's called Fluffy Damn Wolf, you know, so you can go in there and look at Fluffy. And every time someone complains about Fluffy, I usually refer them to the Twitter account so they can talk to Fluffy about it.
That is awesome.
You know, it's funny. Fluffy came about, again, almost purely from playtesting feedback from our Kickstarter backers. And one of the things that we found was, you know, like, I've put wolves in the world primarily where, you know, to balance out the, like, richness of loot, for example, like, or gear items that you could find in the world. So wherever you know you're going to be able to find a bunch of stuff, there has to be some element of danger there, right? Apart from the danger that is pervasive in the world, like weather, bad weather, and all the things that can happen along the way. But a little bit more of an active danger, or active threat. And so what we found was that, you know, it wasn't hard to, you know, you could get to the dam and you could get in there and get a lot of gear and stuff. And there wasn't a lot of risk involved. And so I just one day thought, why not just put a wolf in there just for the hell of it? Let's just see what happens. Right. And the reaction was just amazing and priceless, and because people weren't expecting it and they'd been playing the game for a little while and it never happened to them before, and suddenly they found this wolf in the dam, and, you know, just like people started creating mythologies around how Fluffy got in there, and, you know,
wow.
it's become like its own thing. And so it got to the point where, like, we can't actually get rid of her because people love her so much. Like, people bitch and moan about her because they, you know, she catches them by surprise, but, you know, she doesn't always spawn. And And I guess my argument would be, you know, if you've been in the dam and you've been attacked by Fluffy once, well, then now you know to be prepared next time you go in there. You know?
It's good to know that every single wolf that's murdered my face was delicately hand-placed by Raphael Van Lee Robin.
Well, I mean, they're much more free-roaming than that, but there has been a lot of thought put into kind of the population, and it ebbs and flows. And you'll see from update to update that things do change because we look at the feedback and we understand, you know, certain things, certain tuning things, maybe like swung the pendulum a little bit too far one way or the other. And as I was saying before, we kind of do have, in some ways, we have almost two communities, and some, you know, very vocal people that are looking for something to be extremely challenging and really punishingly hard. And other people that are like, you know, they're okay with it being challenging, but they really just want to experience the game. They just want to walk around and do stuff. And we even have people asking us for a mode where there's no wolves and there's no resource, there's no calorie burn, there's no nothing. They just want to walk around, you know? And I kind of wonder, like, I don't know what kind of a game that would be. I don't think it's actually a game. I think it's just walking around in the world. And I guess it's flattering that they think the world is interested enough to want to do that. But, you know, you often get feedback and requests from people, and I think people don't often really understand what it is they're asking for. You know, they're like, well, why isn't the game in real time? Like, I want a minute of game time to be a minute of real time.
No.
And you're like, well, you're going to be walking around for like 7 hours and nothing's going to happen. So that's probably not what you really want, you know? And so a lot of it is, you know, playtesting is really a little bit of an art where you take the feedback from people and there's a massive amount of interpretation that goes on there. And it's almost never the case where someone says, you know, I have an issue with this. This is what I want you to do to solve it. It's almost never actually that solution is almost never the right solution. Right. So I tend to really approach it from the standpoint of like, okay, this is what the person is struggling with. This is what they don't like. Now let's go figure out a solution that works. And, you know, we're the people who are making the game, and people have bought the game because they believe that we can do a good job of making the game. So it's our job to kind of take that feedback and, you know, analyze it and come up with good solutions. And I have no illusions. Like, we're not going to please everybody, you know, we're just not. And that's okay.
Yeah. You have, you haven't gotten, the career or not career mode, the story mode fully running yet. But when you do, you have some amazing voice actors, and we already knew about David Hayter back last time we spoke. But then it came out that there's going to be Jennifer Hale as well.
Yep. Yeah. So in the sandbox right now, you can play. We created sort of what we call personas for the sandbox because they're not really characters, and so you can pick between a persona who is voiced by Mark Meer, and you can play a persona who's voiced by Jennifer Hale. And, you know, we recorded Jennifer, you know, not even very long ago. It was like 6 or 7 weeks ago to do that. And, you know, we just thought this would be such a great addition for the early access launch. And she's got a huge fan base, and, you know, we just wanted to get that in there. And people seem to be responding really well to it. So, you know, potentially we'll continue to expand on that in Sandbox and kind of offer more personas and, you know, give people a chance to hear a few different voices in there.
I kind of wish you guys consulted me before you got Jennifer Hale, because this really throws a wrench in the I'm freezing my balls off campaign.
Well, she can play her own twist on that.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, she'd probably be up for it. She's very creative.
I had a question for you. What do you think are, like, the benefits of bringing your game out with this early access before, you know, like, having it out with the whole, you know, developer's idea 100%, as opposed, you know, like, what are the benefits of putting it out there quicker, you know, than 100% finished, or your 100% ideas in the game?
Well, it's a trade-off, right? I think that, you know, when you work on something until it's 100, I mean, nothing's ever 100% finished. Let's just say that up front. You know, like, any time you work on a game, it's never done to the level that you would like for it to be done by the time you have to ship it, right? Mm-hmm. And at some point someone says, look, the game has to go out, so close the doors, get it sorted out, and get it out, you know? And then you just live with it afterwards. So I think that, but the difference there is that you can focus on that vision, and you can, you know, you're maybe like a little bit less influenced and a little bit less exposed by what the community would want. But then the flip side is that you're putting it out there and you're taking a chance that there will be people that won't like that experience. And there's feedback that would have been really valuable to have throughout the process that you didn't have access to. And so I think my team is loving the, you know, interaction with the community and the ability to tap into that and get that feedback. Again, it's really still a process of like taking the information and analyzing it ourselves and, you know, making those decisions and feeding that back into the game. And, you know, we do occasionally, you'll see people who are really upset about those changes and because they feel like they weren't listened to. But, you know, generally what we've found is people have been very trusting of our decisions, and we try to do our best to explain them when necessary. And people, you know, it's pretty easy to get people on board usually. And really the benefit of doing the early access thing is that you do get to, you get to make a game that you know people want, right? You know that you understand what they're looking for. You understand what they like and don't like about it. It takes some of the guesswork out of the equation, and you're not really flying as blind as you are often when you work on something, you know, till it's finished and then launch it. I know for myself, I've worked on, you know, most of the games I've worked on have been in that model. And certainly there's lots of times where you release something and then only after the fact you're like, oh shit, you know, I wish we had really understood that better before we made that decision. And, you know, here we get a lot more feedback early on, and we've got a community that's already engaged. And, you know, it's really, I think it's a big relief, I think, to us being at this stage of the project, knowing how much more we will improve the game, knowing how much more content we're going to be adding to the game, you know, that people haven't experienced yet, and knowing that people are already really enjoying it. And, you know, we have lots of people that come back to us and say, like, look, I would have happily paid $60 for just the game, the way the game is right now, even if you weren't doing anything more. Like, people that have put 100 hours into the game already, just in its current state, you know? So it makes us feel really like we're on the right track. And you know, we wouldn't know that if we hadn't gone through this process. You know, we would always wonder until we launched this thing, you know, whether people are going to actually like it or not.
So you were, you guys, were, before going indie with Hinterland, you were with major game promotions and part of major triple A titles
quadruple A, man.
Oh yeah, he was in the quadruple A one. Looking at the, we talk about this on the show all the time, things like just in the games industry that rub us the wrong way that we don't like. Like one thing that is a trigger for people is extra content that you have to pay for that's already on the disc. Like that's one.
So what do they call it? The where you pay up front and then the season pass.
Yeah, kind of like the season pass stuff, or like Mortal Kombat does. They'll throw the characters on the disc, like they're already on there, but you got to pay to unlock them. That kind of thing. For other people, it's microtransactions. Like, what, in your opinion, you know, coming from that world more specifically, what are things that you think are killing the industry?
Whew. Wow, you guys don't ask easy questions. Let me just touch quickly on the one about the stuff on disc that you're paying for to unlock. It's been a little while since I've worked on a console game a few years now, but a lot of the time, those decisions were driven more by the platform holders than by anything else. So, for example, like I remember Microsoft, they may not have this anymore, but I remember when we finaled Space Marine, this was very much a common practice that you couldn't actually, you needed to ship everything on the disc. So the first DLC that you were going to release had to be on disc, even though, you know, just to pass the certification process with them. So often it wasn't the case of being like, you know, and of course, from a player's perspective, it looks like, hey, I already own this stuff. Well, now, why do I have to pay you to have the key to unlock it? But from the developer standpoint, it was more like, this is the only way that we can produce the content and provide it to people for later on, because this is the only mechanism that we have. That's probably changed since then because of everything's digital now, so it's a lot easier to update stuff. But I do think that there was a lot of kind of misunderstanding from the point of view of players, and I don't think developers and publishers were able to do a very good job kind of educating people about those reasons. And so it ended up feeling like a cash grab on the part of publishers and developers, as opposed to just them trying to work around the sort of the restrictions of the system, right? In terms of microtransactions, and are you talking about free to play specifically, or what are you thinking there?
Yeah, for free to play and like pay to win type of structures that you see in a lot of the games.
I don't really enjoy free to play games, generally speaking. I think that, you know, you give a game away for free, and then every decision that you make is built around the motivation of trying to find, you know, ways to get people to pay for it. And usually you're going to need to, you know, use some fairly manipulative tactics to do that. And, you know, I have friends and colleagues that have made free-to-play mobile games over the last few years that have genuinely tried to do it in a fair and honorable way, let's say, that have found that they don't make any money that way, and that if they want to survive in that model, they have to be using all the same dirty tricks that everybody else is using. And I just think, to me, it really kind of pollutes the whole process, and it really like biases the conversation with your player in a very weird way. I really believe that my job and our job is to create an amazing, magical experience and have a reputation and a relationship with you to the point where you believe that you're going to get good value when you buy our game. And I don't want to have to convince you to do that by like using tricks, right? I just want to do something great and like talk to you and use the pedigree of the team and the way we deal with our community and the reputation that we've been building over the last couple of years so that you feel confident, you know, like there's certain developers that, you know, you're going to give them your money and you're going to have a great experience, right? And so you never would think about a free game from those people. You're happy to give them your money, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we're striving towards. And I don't like, you know, I don't like a model where it's all about trying to convince people to give you money. It feels wrong to me, and it feels like it forces you to make all the wrong decisions for all the wrong reasons. I think games are about it being, you know, having an amazing experience, and that's where I want, you know, you to be. And I would rather have the free-to-play thing is really about having as many people playing your game as possible, because it's a really small percentage of people that are going to play it. So you make decisions around trying to reach the widest audience possible, because that's the only way you're going to make money. I would much rather have a really small audience that's willing to pay for our game because they believe in what we're doing and they really love the game. And to me, that's all it comes down to. It's really simple.
Now, we've had you on the show once before, and we talked a lot. And one of the things we didn't cover that has always been on my mind is, and I don't know, forgive me if you've talked about it in another article or something that I missed, but what are some of the things that drove you away and made you want to go indie?
You know, I think if I'm honest, I've always kind of, from the very, very beginning of starting out in the industry, I always wanted to do my own thing. I think all the years that I've worked on, you know, games within other studios and publisher-owned studios, it's not that I didn't love that experience, and certainly I learned a ton from doing that, but I think it was always just a case of wanting to kind of build enough credibility and enough knowledge to eventually kind of strike off on my own. When Space Marine was done, I had a lot of colleagues that were going independent, and, you know, because of shifts in the marketplace and suddenly App Store was a valid, you know, way for people to sell games, at least it was a few years ago, and, you know, Steam was growing growing, and it just, you know, the PC became a platform again that people were talking about, and development tools like Unity and whatnot became viable, and suddenly, like, there was this whole new opportunity out there. And I was really, really fortunate when I finished Space Marine to have been offered, like, lots of great opportunities to go work on other AAA games for great studios, much better studios and much better games than I probably deserve. And I, you know, I certainly contemplated a lot of those opportunities, because, and what I found myself thinking was, like, if I go and work on that game, all I'm doing is, like, I'm still chasing that credibility. And at some point, you know, you got to make a decision to just do it, you know? And with a big AAA game, you're committing to something for 2, 3, 4 years potentially. And so what are you going to do when you're finished with that? Like, are you going to even have the energy anymore to go and do it? Or are you going to be willing to take that risk? And so for me, it was just a case of, like, the timing lining up and deciding, and this is the time to take a chance. And, you know, I was really ready to fail on every level, and it certainly could have happened. And I don't, you know, somewhat where we are right now is based on, you know, having made good decisions and timing, and some of it is based on luck. And I think we're really, really conscious of that. I love the independent kind of space, and, you know, I don't call us indie because I don't really know what that means, but we're certainly independent. We're independent in all the ways that I think that word is meaningful. Like, we come up with our own game concepts. We have our own development process. Nobody's calling the shots. Nobody's telling us what to do. We've raised all the money ourselves independently. We own 100% of the company, 100% of the IP. You know, we the only people that we're beholden to are our customers, and those are the people who have paid us for the game and are expecting to get something from that. And it's a pretty amazing feeling to be able to do that and to have that kind of freedom. And I think that's really, frankly, I think that's probably what every game developer wants, but not everybody can have it.
The feeling of pride that you have in The Long Dark, have you ever had that before in a game you've worked on?
No, never. No, if anything, you know, anytime a game that I've worked on has been successful in some way, I've never really felt like any kind of ownership for that. I always felt like it was something out of my control. Even when I was partly responsible for the success, I always felt like it wasn't really my thing. And 'cause it never is. You're working, you know, when you work with 200 other people on a game, it's not your game, you know? And this game isn't my game either, because I have a team that without whom I would never be able to do this. But certainly this game is so much more of a personal expression of my creative values and beliefs as an artist, if I can use that term, and a designer and a writer and a developer and all these things that I care about. And, you know, definitely I feel so grateful and proud of, like, kind of where we are at right now. And I really, like, I'm so proud and honored about, you know, to be able to work with the team that I have. I mean, these guys, I would be nowhere if not for them. And, you know, I think we just feel this tremendous sense of responsibility. You know, for anytime anybody says something good about the game, like, instead of patting ourselves on the back about it, we're kind of like, wow, you know, now we really owe that, like, with that person, we really owe them to live up to that expectation and that sort of faith that they have in us.
Do you have, now this is kind of a big story recently with Marcus Notch Person.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Microsoft purchased Mojang for an insane amount of money. Mm-hmm. Have you ever met Notch, or do you have thoughts on that? And, like, would Hinterland ever consider being purchased by a major company like that?
I don't know Marcus. You know, I think that his success with Minecraft has been incredible. You know, I play that game with my kids, and I think it's a wonderful, wonderful game. It's really hard to say what you would and would not do if someone came along and offered you $2.5 billion for your company, right?
Yeah.
But I will say that we, you know, ever since we announced the studio and the project, we've been pretty much constantly courted by a number of publishers or investors that would like to own part of what we're doing. And we have always said no. And because, you know, as I said, we're as independent as that word has any meaning. And we're, you know, as soon as you take money from someone, you're giving up some kind of, like, you know, we've been really lucky to be able to use funding sources that allowed us to be independent and to control our own destiny and to own the things that we're doing. I really firmly believe that IP ownership is like an inalienable kind of right to a developer. And as soon as you give that away for money, like, you've already lost, right? Because that's the future. That's the future that you have as a company. That's the value that you have as a company. So yeah, I mean, we've certainly not had the kind of offers to purchase us that Mark has had for Minecraft.
But is that not the goal for Hinterland?
No, not at all. No, not at all. I mean, the goal for Hinterland is more to be like a Pixar or an IDEO kind of thing, where it's more about having a reputation for kind of creative excellence and the quality of the work that we do. And the financial, like, as long as we can keep making games and we're able to pay our bills, like, I think we're all going to be satisfied with that. It's not about getting rich. It's about making great stuff.
I think that's the root of your guys' success right there. It's got to be. It's got to be, because, you know, and we talked a long time before we started this interview, kind of just about success and what it is. And I think, you know, that your guys' attitude and having that heart, it comes through. It comes through.
I hope so, you know, because the team is, they're really, you know, some of the best people that I've worked with in the industry, so passionate about what they do, and just come, you know, every day come and just like put their heart and soul into the game, you know. And I think you can feel that, you can see that. And it's really a labor of love for everyone. And, you know, and that's why when you get criticism, it hurts, right? Because it's like personal. But then when you have praise, it feels so amazing. And we often get asked, or I often get asked in interviews, like, what's success for you? And for me, success is like whenever I get a note from a fan who went out of their way to tell us about like some moment that they had in the game that really impacted them, you know? And I think like, wow, that's magic right there. You know, that's exactly what we were trying to do. That's because we've all played amazing games that touched us in some way that, you know, I remember the games that made me want to be a game developer. It was like Half-Life and Deus Ex. The first Deus Ex were like games where I had those moments of experiencing something truly magical, and it made me want to make games. And, you know, like, my dream is that we have people that play our game when it's done, and we'll have like the next generation of people that are like, yeah, your game, you know, really made me think about making games, and I wanted to create an experience like you were able to create for me. We had a message from someone a few weeks ago, and it was like the best thing anyone could have ever said to me. It was, you know, the last time I had a feeling, you know, this feeling playing a game was when I first played Half-Life. That was the last time they had that kind of a feeling that they had playing The Long Dark. And I was like, I almost had tears in my eyes. I was like, that's like you have no idea how amazing it is for me to hear that, because it's exactly what I hope people would feel, you know? So yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Wow. Well, it really seems like you're living the dream, my friend. And as always, we thank you so much for your time. It is, not often we get a big-time game developer who's conquered the AAA space and now is dominating the independent realm with this amazing game that is available today. You can go get it right now on Steam. It's called The Long Dark. It's not hard to find because it's in the top 20 list. Rav, now, we messed with the idea a lot of freezing my balls off, and I've been playing the game, and I've yet to actually hear those exact words. I mean, am I... Is this in there?
You know what? It isn't at the moment, but
oh my god,
we still have a lot of recording to do. So
it's going to be in the fluffy DLC.
It's on the DLC that's already on the disc, isn't
fluffy
it?
Fluffy DLC.
Well, well, there's no disc, but you know, we've got story mode has a nearly endless opportunity for us to get really interesting characters and dialogue in there. And, you know, I have a feeling, you know, that we'll find a way to fit it in there.
Okay. And Aaron would like to audition one more time, because as everybody remembers, fans of the show remember, Aaron, he doesn't get nervous easy, but
I didn't get nervous.
You clammed up.
I needed
you
water.
You blew your interview.
I needed,
the world was listening.
If you've gone through plenty of sit downs with, you know, voiceover actors, and you know, they probably have their little tiffs that they need. You know, I need red jelly beans in my green room or something like that before the shoot or something like
I'm
that.
I'm not buying it. So yeah. One more time for Raf. Aaron, here's your chance for redemption.
It's freezing out there. Okay.
Okay. Get yourself in the mind. Close your eyes. Everybody listening, close your eyes right
Fluffy
now.
Fluffy is closing in.
Fluffy's in the other room right now. Aaron, it's 0 degrees. I don't know. Is that cold? Yeah, that's cold, right?
Yeah, it's cold. That's cold for Californians.
So we're, close your eyes. Imagine that it's very cold outside, Aaron. And the thing that comes to your head is, I'm freezing my balls off. Go ahead.
I'm freezing my balls off out here.
Wow, I think he's been vindicated.
That was Oscar worthy, man.
He's
wow. Thank you.
Stella got his groove back.
Wow. 50-year-old Jamaican woman? Is that what's going on?
Raph, thank you so much, my friend. And we're going to have you back on the show once this game wins Game of the Year.
Oh, well, I hope you'll let us on the show, even if that doesn't happen.
You know, maybe we'll be able to carve out some time in the old schedule.
That's awesome. Terrible.
Thanks a lot for your time, guys. It's always great to chat to you, and you know, you always have awesome questions, and it just feels like hanging out with buddies and, you know, drinking beer, although we don't have beer. So next time we need beer.
Next time I'm up in Canada,
we're gonna have
some beer.
Sounds good.
All right, Raphael Van Lierop from The Long Dark, everybody. Wow, that was a hell of a show, if I do say so myself. This is one of my favorite shows. I think this is one of my crowning achievements.
Really?
I really do. Like, this was like hardcore stuff. This is like behind the curtain.
Like the Wizard of Oz, like, behind the curtain?
Yeah, except there's not just some old bald dude. There's actually a really...
Well, we don't know.
He could be bald.
He could be, yeah.
Who, Raph? Raphael is not bald.
You never know.
I mean, we had two developers... I say that like Bill Cosby. Two developers.
Wow, that's terrible.
We had Zach, who's like up and coming, like at the beginning of what's going to be an awesome career.
Zac Efron, huh?
Then we have Raphael, who's like... You're going to have one for him, too?
Raphael, mother, brother of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Yeah. Wow.
So God. Raphael, like, been there, done that, went to the top of the, you know, the...
Mountain?
Top of the mountain, and then built his own mountain.
So he's higher than the other mountains? Is that what you're saying?
Wow, I'm not trying to say anybody's above anybody.
I'm just saying, I think Peter Molyneux would have some gripes with you, sir.
Wow, I'm very excited for what the future holds.
Molyneux is terrible.
For Video Game Bang. Thank you all for being a part of it. We have some, what I think are our biggest interviews to come in the very near future. I don't like to say what they are before they actually happen, but they're some pretty big people in the industry, and I'm, you know, not nervous, but I'm very excited.
Peter Molyneux, everybody.
It's
that's his
going. It's not Peter Molyneux. Do not listen to Peter Molyneux. He is not in my network yet.
Yeah.
I'll get him on the show for you, Aaron. Just for you.
I will tear him apart.
I'll get Peter Molyneux.
So we're going to be looking forward to that. At the end of this show, we're going to play the beginning of the interview we did, Raphael, because we pre-record the shows. So we had a long, like, candid conversation with Raphael before the interview you just heard. And I think the best little trinkets and nuggets are in there. So stick around after the little post credits for that. For Aaron Carter and Jada, I want to thank you guys both for being huge staples of this show. I want to thank everyone for listening. And we will be back this weekend with the Weekend Bang.
Let me bang, man.
I do let you bang. Hey.
Let me bang again, man.
I let you bang.
Let me bang.
I let you bang.
Let me bang.
Let me bang.
Let you bang.
Now go fuck yourselves.
Hey, Corey.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Not too much. How are you doing?
Very well. Congratulations.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we hear you great. Let me get my levels over here. Yeah. Can't wait for this interview. I've been looking forward to this one for a while. It felt like it was forever.
It's been a while. I mean, I don't remember exactly when we did this, but it's definitely been months and months.
Yeah, I think we had you on our first episode with Nerd Reactor, and we're like 52 episodes deep now.
Well, there you go. It's been a while.
So it's going to boost the level just a little bit more. With me is my co-host, Aaron.
What's up?
Hey, Aaron. How's it going, man?
Good, good, good.
Good. You freezing your balls off?
Not in California, no.
So... freaking hot here. I play The Long Dark because my air conditioner doesn't work. It makes me cold.
Now I want that as a quote to put on the box.
Yeah.
It's an untapped market right there.
Yeah.
People without air functioning air conditioner.
Just play this game and close your eyes and make believe. No, that's the thing too. Like, after anticipating the game for so long, it's so good that the game is good. Like,
it is good that the game is good. We talked
to you back then, and we were like, oh man, we talk about this game all the time. We were excited about it, and then when you get your hopes up, it's so easy to get let down. So we were extremely happy that it didn't suck.
Yeah, well, it's same for us, right? I mean, we're except we see it from the other side. It's like we see all the anticipation, and then you have all that pressure to live up to it, right? So
Oh, yeah.
It's been good to see that people seem happy.
Yeah, and I've been noticing, like, everything I've read thus far has been positive. Like, I'm sure you guys get the negative, like, see the negative more, but, like, just as an outsider, just through Twitter and all the articles I've read, it's all been positive feedback.
Yeah, I mean, are you recording this right now? Do you want to get right into it, or is this banter?
I am recording, and this is banter. I might.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, no, I mean, I'm fine either way. It's good stuff. Yeah, I mean, we've been really, like, fortunate. We've had almost entirely really positive feedback, even when there's been, like, it's been couched in, you know, a little bit of criticism, which is totally valid and always helpful. The general spirit and, you know, of the communication has always been very, very, very positive. We certainly have some, you know, a constituency of players that is looking for, like, an even more hardcore experience than what they're finding in the game.
Wow.
So it's really quite.
Yeah, those people need to go outside then, because you can't really get more true to survival than just going out there, hard, difficult survival.
Well, I mean, you know, it's interesting because we set out to make a survival game, well, a survival simulation. But I think when we started this, and certainly when we, you know, back months and months ago when we first spoke about the project, I think, you know, we sort of embarked on this without really understanding the expectations of the genre, because I don't think it really was a genre truly then, but now it is. I mean, there's enough games that are in this sort of survival type genre, like DayZ and Rust and The Forest and whatnot, that people have expectations now. And so, you know, if you were to start a game like this today, you would go and do a bunch of research on those games and see what they're doing and see what people like about them and kind of build your concept around some of those things, presumably. But we didn't do that. We sort of embarked on this before a lot of those games had really taken off. Like, when we started working on The Long Dark, you know, DayZ was just kind of starting. It was just picking up speed, and it was more interesting as kind of like a social experiment than a game at that point.
Yeah.
So we didn't start this project or even think about this project kind of in terms of, like, how are we going to fit into this genre of survival games? We just had picked a direction of our own, a concept, and we had a vision for what we wanted to deliver, and we just ran with that. And so coming out this other side, and, you know, obviously we still have a lot of work to do, but now, you know, you can play the game and you can experience, you know, what it is that we've been building, you know, in the time in between. You know, it's just interesting to get the feedback from people that are looking at the game, you know, from the standpoint of comparing us to those other games and saying, you know, what are the things that they like and what are the things that they don't like. Yeah. And so now we find ourselves in a place where people have expectations about a genre that we have to kind of consider, that we probably didn't really consider before. So it's been an interesting experience that way, to kind of try to understand that a little bit better. And yeah, we do have, you know, we certainly have people who, like, they love the game and they want it to be multiplayer because they love multiplayer games and they love DayZ and they want to have that kind of experience.
Yeah,
and then
you must have read the letter that came from Aaron Carter over here, because that's every game that comes out.
Yeah.
Has to have a multiplayer for this guy.
Yes.
Yeah. And I mean, I get the reasons, or, you know, whether it's multiplayer or co-op, I totally understand the reasons for why people would like to have that. And I think, you know, like, aside from, if I take my developer hat off for a minute and ignore all the, like, technical challenges of trying to do that in a game that's already in development, you know, I think about it from the standpoint of, like, well, look, there are already some pretty good games out there that are multiplayer that offer that kind of zombie experience and all that kind of stuff. So let's let those games do that, and let's let them do it well, and let's let The Long Dark be something that's different from those games, and let's let it be the thing that it wants to be.
Yeah.
So, you know, but it has certainly been interesting, and particularly I think we've seen this since we launched Early Access and we've, you know, got this community now in Steam that's been growing. You know, we start to see that there is a little bit of stratification in our community or our audience in terms of what they're looking for. And we've got people that are very much responding to kind of like the emotional, visceral side of the game. And they're totally fine with certain things being abstracted out, and they don't, you know, they embrace that part of the experience, and they're really more, you know, reacting to how the game makes them feel, you know. And then there's other people, and I would say that's probably the majority of our players. And then there's a smaller group of people who are really, really vocal, who are looking for, you know, again, a much more hardcore, much more quote-unquote realistic simulation than we'll ever really deliver on. Because, to be honest, I don't think the thing that a lot of people are asking for would be any fun. I mean, they want it to be real-time, and they want to live in, you know, they want the Grizzly Adams simulator. And we're not really that. And you know, so it's been interesting to try to find a way to balance between those two things, because certainly there's a lot of stuff that the hardcore, you know, survival sim type people are looking for that are on our wish list and are, you know, are on our roadmap, I should say, and the things that we will get into. Are we ever going to get it to the point where they're really satisfied with it? I'm not really sure, yeah. You know, and I think it's definitely, you know, there's a danger in trying to, you know, make the game really appeal to those people and kind of lose the original intent or the original spirit of the game. So, you know, this is one of the interesting challenges that comes from working on a game and having a live community, as opposed to working on a game till it's finished and then launching it, and then people either like it or they don't like it. You know, in this case, you get the feedback and you have to make decisions based on it, and it's you know, it's really interesting because you definitely can see how projects can get pulled in a lot of different directions.
Yeah, I was gonna say a lot of these games they're in alpha for so long. And mm-hmm. they go into the game way too soon, or and it just feels like it's forever and never finished, like an always unfinished project. What do you anticipate for The Long Dark right now? Do you think it'll be, how long do you think estimated it'll be in this early access?
Well, we sort of decided when we started the early access process that we didn't want to be in it for very long. And we've sort of said, like, we'll do it for a few months and kind of see what happens. You know, like, I think we came to early access with a game that was already quite far along in terms of the level of polish and the, you know, how stable it is. I mean, we have almost no crashes, very few bugs. You know, the game, this is a piece of feedback that we're sort of continuously getting from our community, particularly now that we're on Steam. I think, you know, the first few days we were on Steam, you get all the early access sucks people, and you know, it doesn't have anything to do with the actual game. It just has to do with the idea of early access. And then that quickly sort of switched once people actually tried the game and sort of saw the state of the game. They were like, oh my God, this is the most stable, you know, early access title. And, you know, we did this, our sixth update today on our sandbox based on, you know, bugs and community feedback that's come up since we launched last Monday. And people are like, you know, we actually have people that are now telling us, like, don't update so often, you know? So, whereas, you know, and they're complaining about other games don't update, you know, they don't update it more than once a month or once every 2 months, and they never hear from the community. And, you know, we've been in the forums and interacting directly with people and, you know, taking our hits as well, right? And we have people in our community, again, saying to us, like, why are you guys in the forums? Go make the game. And we're like, this is part of making the game, is being here with you guys.
I've learned a lot about humanity. Recently in forums and the internet, so there's always people complaining, finding things to complain about.
It's definitely, you know, you gotta be pretty tough,
yeah,
right, to be able to go in there and certainly there were days where I, you know, especially in the early days of our campaign, the first few days where we did have a lot of the kind of negative. And I think these people, my theory is that these people kind of are in Steam and they just go from game to game and just kind of like spew their stuff and then move on to the next one, you know,
journeyman.
Because that's what they're looking for. They're not really looking to contribute or improve the game. They just want to complain about stuff.
Yeah.
And we've gotten to the point where those people have mostly gone away because the majority of our community is positive and wants to make the game better. And they've basically told those people to fuck off.
Yeah.
And now we have people that are genuinely dedicated to yeah, improving the game and helping us understand how to improve the game from their perspective and giving us feedback and helping us find bugs. So, you know, to answer your question more directly, I think, you know, we've envisioned this for kind of as a few sort of 2-3 month process. We're still waiting to see kind of how things go. We've certainly had we have a huge wish list from the community of things that they want to see in the game. But, you know, the sandbox is only part of the experience for us. We have the story mode, which is really, you know, in a lot of ways, sort of the showpiece of the whole thing. And so we don't want to be sitting in the sandbox, you know, in early access and just putting resources only into the sandbox ad infinitum. Like, we want to finish that off, get the story episodes out, and start that process. And so, you know, to me, our roadmap looks kind of like, you know, get the feedback out of early access to the point where we have a really solid core and, you know, beyond where it is right now. I think it's already solid, but there's certainly things we can improve. Get the first episodes of the story mode out. And then it's a continual process of updating the sandbox, updating the story mode as we move forward, and the game will sort of continue to evolve. So sort of like how you develop an MMO, except this is a single player game, right? Yeah.
So one thing I was thinking about you guys recently too, because you guys are getting pretty damn good press for an indie title, but right now you're competing with a juggernaut in Destiny right now that seems to be every other article on every website's a Destiny. And then Call of Duty's coming out, so I'm sure that's going to be hogging up a lot of the stuff. So for an indie developer, has it been difficult to gain attention in the video game space, or are you guys getting a lot of bleed over, or how's this working for you guys?
It's been going really well. I mean, I definitely feel like, you know, it's been interesting. Like we've been really fortunate to have a lot of press attention throughout the development of the game. And, you know, when we first shared some early builds of the alpha with our Kickstarter backers originally, so this was back in July or even June, and we started sharing some early press builds. And so, you know, you probably saw some of the press coming out earlier, and it was generally positive and sort of has become more and more positive over time. We've been really fortunate to kind of be able to stay in the press or stay in the news and kind of get a lot of coverage. I definitely felt like when Destiny launched on the 9th of September, it was harder to get people's attention for sure. Yeah, yeah. And we knew that was going to happen. And we, you know, we contemplated whether, you know, we had kind of locked in on our September 22nd date. And then, you know, we thought about Wasteland 2 launching on the 19th and Destiny was going to be coming out on the first week of September. And we talked about whether it would make sense to try to pull our release in a bit or push it out or whatever. And eventually we just said, you know, we got to launch when it's right for us and when we're ready to do it and just kind of ignore everything else that's going on. And, you know, my belief is, yeah, a lot of journalists were writing about Destiny instead of playing the long dark, and that's okay. You know, we've actually had a huge amount of support from the press, but even more so, we've had massive pickup in the YouTube and Twitch community. And I think actually, in terms of getting eyes on the game and raising the awareness of the game, to be honest, I think that's had an even bigger impact than any kind of press coverage that we could have had. So, you know, I think in the end, it's turned out really well for us. We're also talking to different communities. You know, I think that the people that are looking for Destiny are you know, the console shooter fans, and the people that are playing the long dark are, you know, they're looking for a different experience. So there's never going to be a time of year, particularly around this time of year, where there's sort of a safe zone to launch a game and not get kind of crushed between a bunch of other releases. I feel really happy. You know, the team is super stoked about how things have gone with early access. I mean, we launched the day we launched, within 3 hours, we were number 2 in the top sellers.
Yeah, and I noticed that. That was amazing. Congratulations.
It was really amazing for us to see that. And I mean, you know, we're still in the top 20 and we're cranking out stuff. And, you know, we're going to be putting out another, like a pretty big, content update with more, making the sandbox bigger and adding some new content and mechanics later on this month. And so we're just really excited about kind of like feeding that machine now and getting that feedback and keeping that thing going. But yeah, I mean, we've just been lucky. We managed to pick a concept that people care about. We've got a story that people care about in terms of the studio background and the kind of game that we're trying to make. And yeah, I mean, to be honest, Destiny feels like it's happening in kind of a different world from where we are.
Have you had a chance to play Destiny or any other games recently, or have you your head just been down into the long dark?
My head's certainly been down. I did play the beta, the Destiny beta, for probably 2-3 hours, and I did lift my head up to kind of check that out because of all the hype, and I have friends that work at Bungie on it, and you know, I wanted to check it out. But that's pretty much the only game that I've really tinkered around with aside from ours for the last little while. So yeah.
Do you as a game developer, is it hard to play other people's games?
It's not hard to play other people's games. It's sometimes hard to find time to play other people's games. You know, you never feel like you play your own game enough, right? And so then there's always that, it's not a guilt thing, but it's more like, wow, if I have an hour to spare, I should really go and like play test some more stuff and, you know, do some more systems and get some more content. Sorry?
No, I was going to say, like, how do you, when you go back to those other games, how do you keep it from, like, affecting what you're doing on your own game? Like, how do you, like, tune that stuff out?
Well, I guess it's maybe, like, having worked in games for quite a few years and having seen how easy it is for people to be influenced by other people's games. And even, you know, when I was early on in my career, like, I think everybody that makes games when they were just starting out has a story about someone, you know, a producer, a lead designer, or an executive that was, you know, influenced by whatever new, you know, flavor of the month was out there and was frustrated about it, you know? So I try to be really conscious of that. And I'm also really, I don't know, it's probably a flaw in my personality, but I hate the idea of people looking at The Long Dark and thinking that we borrowed ideas from other games. They may already think that. I have no idea, but I almost feel like I rather would be insulated from the other games that are out there, and so as to not be influenced, so that the things that we end up doing we're doing them because they emerge naturally from our own creative process and our own development process. So we put in features because they feel like they belong and they're a natural outcome of the game that's already there, as opposed to playing some other game and being, oh wow, that's a cool feature, let's put that in our game, you know? I've always been that way, and you know, probably always will be.
I plan on using I consider this like the pre-interview, like the deep cuts. So I'm going to include this, probably at the end of the episode.
Sure.
But I got one more question, like more, you know, deep. I have a buddy, he's been on our show a few times. He's a game developer, out of a college in Utah, and, his name's Zach Truscott. They made a game called Cyber Heist.
Okay.
And I thought the concept was amazing. Multiplayer game, one player is in first person mode, like in the bank, robbing the bank. And the other person is playing like a top down puzzler game, and they work in perfect cohesion together.
Oh, cool.
And it's been winning awards, and he's been going to indie shops. So I told him you were going to be on the show, and he was very excited. He said that Hinterland, and I'll quote, he said, "What they're doing is awesome. It's an all-star crew making an incredible game." And he had a question: what advice do you have for a small indie studio?
Well, tell him thank you very much for the kind words. And I'm definitely going to have to check out his game. It sounds very cool. There's a long answer to that question. I think what I would say is, make sure you educate yourself about all the new ways in which you need to reach an audience. And, you know, for us, my team, because we all did come from the AAA space and we're really accustomed to, the benefit of large marketing teams and budgets to raise awareness about the games that we're doing. And since we've been doing The Long Dark, we've done it all ourselves. And I think, you know, the Kickstarter campaign was kind of the first step of that process of raising awareness and kind of developing a community. But like, I'll be honest with you, I didn't know anything about YouTube and Twitch when we started doing this. And it's even only been the last few months that I've started to kind of wrap my head around the way that community works. And it's not something that you can afford to ignore. Like, you really need to be able to tap into the strength of that community and know how to talk to those people and get them to play your game and share it with people. And I do really think that that's kind of like the new way of, it's like authentic marketing in a way. You know, as much as people kind of complain about the payola stuff with the YouTubers, I think that, you know, these people have communities that trust them, and when they show a game and they have genuine excitement about it, then I think people believe that maybe more than they believe a lot of other sources. And I think you can't afford to ignore that. And, you know, unfortunately, I think a lot of indie developers still kind of cling to that belief that, you know, as long as they make a good game, it'll sort itself out and people will find out about it and they'll have good sales. And, you know, we all know that that's not the case. We all know that there are lots of really great games. There's games out there that are way better than The Long Dark that will never have the success that we're having, because unfortunately they're just not able to kind of reach that community, or they just don't know how to take advantage of that that audience. So, definitely that's something that you can't afford to ignore.
Wow, that's actually good advice, not just for video game developers, but for podcasters or YouTubers. I mean, that's...
Put themselves out there, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's just been kind of a real surprise to me, just how influential that whole part of the, you know, let's just say it, it's part of the games press now, whether we want to call these people journalists or not, like, we can debate that, but they really are part of that whole mechanism for getting your game out in front of people. And then there's also pitfalls. Like, I mean, there was a great article on Gamma Sutra yesterday about how people are using, you know, YouTube to kind of scam developers out of out of Steam keys. I don't know if you guys read that article. It was pretty interesting how, you know, as a test, they went and posed as a YouTuber and managed to collect within, like, I think it was an hour, about $400 worth of Steam keys from developers who thought they were actually a YouTuber that was going to promote their game, right?
Oh, wow.
And so this is something that, you know, you were talking about how spending time in forums, you kind of learn a lot about humanity, and that's definitely true. And you also learn a lot about humanity, not the good part, when you realize how many ways people can find to kind of like screw you over as a developer, yeah. you know, and get keys out of you and resell them and all kinds of stuff. That's and so dirty. It's hard not to get cynical about that stuff. You know, I find that personally find that really frustrating just because this is our, you know, our bread and butter. And we don't come from a big development studio with a big budget, and we don't have a legal department, and we don't have any of these things to kind of protect us from that. And we need to, you know, I'm like, you know, going between tuning the game and answering interviews and like checking our Steam stuff. And then I'm like, sending in copyright takedown notices to YouTube because people are putting like posting videos with links to like cracked versions of our game, you
oh,
know?
Oh, snap.
Wow. And it feels like a shitty way to have to spend your time, you know?
Yeah. So that brings me, you kind of see, we were supposed to keep this part short, but this is the good stuff. Like, this is the people I think this is the stuff people want to hear, the hardcores. So, we're talking about media and press and scams and all this kind of stuff. Were you at all familiar or with what people were calling Gamergate?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
And what are your thoughts? We've spent hours on this show talking about it, and then humanity was a very big part of that, and what's decent. And but I'd like to hear someone from where you stand. What do you take away from it?
It's funny. I was talking to a colleague earlier today about the whole Gamergate thing, and we both sort of agreed how, you know, that I think we have pretty reasonable opinions about the whole thing, and we're decent people, and we, you know, I think we can call right from wrong, and we both kind of admitted to each other that it's really hard to talk about this topic because it doesn't really feel like it's about what's right or wrong for most people. It feels just like people have kind of, you know, staked a claim on an idea, and they're going to argue it no matter what you say. And so it's kind of hard to wade out into that argument. I think there's certain things that we can all agree are wrong. I think people shouldn't be threatened. You know, I don't think people should be afraid to be in their homes with their families because, you know, people are online spewing terrible threats to them. I think we can all agree that that's wrong. I think we can all agree that, you know, the anonymity of the internet turns people who have probably otherwise really reasonable opinions into monsters sometimes. And that kind of biases the conversation in a way where it becomes a war between people and where nobody's really talking anymore, right? They're just kind of, like I said, they've garrisoned themselves in an ideology, and there's nothing really you can really do. Like, they don't want to be convinced otherwise, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it's really unfortunate. I think it's great that people are talking about it because it's surfacing certain issues that are kind of part of, let's call it, gaming culture that I think we need to talk about and we need to address and we have to acknowledge. But I also think there's so much unreasonableness, you know, on both sides of the discussion in terms of how these discussions are happening and how the arguments are raging, that the whole thing feels like it's just gotten way out of hand, right? And so it's kind of like when you watch two children arguing, and children when they're young enough, they don't have any ability to kind of discuss. They can only like hit each other and yell and call each other names. And
yeah.
You know, you can talk, you know, I can use this example because I have young kids and I see it. You know, it's like you can sit down with them and try and have a rational discussion with them about what they're doing and help them navigate that, but they don't have the skills to do that on their own. And I kind of feel like that's a little bit what this discussion can sometimes fall into. It sort of feels like nobody is really talking. They're just kind of busy yelling at each other, right? And so, yeah, I think it's really unfortunate. I mean, I totally support, you know, people's right to express their opinion. I think it's great that people have divergent opinions. I do not at all accept the idea that, again, as I said, people's lives are being threatened. There's a lot of cowardice, you know, going on with, you know, anonymous snipes and threats and all that kind of stuff that I find absolutely disgusting.
Yeah.
I really support people who, you know, like Lee Alexander and certainly Anita Sarkeesian. I don't agree with everything she has to say, but I certainly, you know, agree with her right to express that opinion. And she has an audience, and you kind of either like it or you don't like it. And if you don't like it, maybe you should just not watch her stuff. And, you know, that's okay. There's a lot of opinions on the internet, as we all know, right?
Yeah.
We don't have to agree with all of them. And it doesn't mean we have to go out of our way to disagree with them either, right? So I just think there's not a lot of reasonableness kind of in this conversation right now. And so as I said, I wouldn't say anything about it. I spent the last 10 minutes talking about it, but you know what I mean? It's like, you know, you don't want to be, you don't want to put yourself in there until people are ready to actually talk. Right. And then
yeah.
It's like, okay, now let's talk about it for real. Now that the emotions have kind of come down a little bit and people realize that, you know, we can all look at each other sheepishly about that big crazy argument that we just had, and now let's try to really solve it, right? Now that we've calmed down a little bit, but I don't know that we're at that point.
Do you know Zoe, or did you reach out to her, or do you have any experience? Or
I don't know her at all, and I don't know. The only person that I think probably in this whole thing that I have, I can't even say it's a connection, but like I mentioned in my Twitter yesterday, like Lee Alexander, I really enjoy her criticism. She wrote one of my favorite articles about The Long Dark when we did our Kickstarter campaign, and I really support her voice, like in the industry. And you know, I thought her article, the one that she wrote that she's getting a lot of flack for about kind of gamers are over, I thought it was interesting as a point of view, you know. And in some ways, I agree with the idea that, you know, we should be ready to broaden our definition of what gamers are, and it doesn't have to threaten anybody, you know. Yeah. And I think that it's a little silly that we, you know, think about ourselves as having such a defined culture as gamers that we should feel threatened by that. Like, I mean, people don't talk about themselves as, you know, film watchers or TV watchers, mm-hmm. to the point where like they're going to fight with other people about what that means, right?
Yeah.
And so why do we, you know, I don't understand why we feel the need to do that. And I've seen the arguments, you know, games are more immersive and people get more attached to them, and so they're more passionate about them. And sure, that's true, and that's actually a really wonderful thing, right? I mean, that's what we want. We want people to have a really close connection to our work. But, you know, I just think it's become a huge sort of distraction from a lot of other things. And, you know, I'm just, in some cases, when I see articles in the mainstream press about Gamergate and stuff, I feel really embarrassed, you know, for the industry and for my profession, because I think that's what people, you know, people who love to rag on video games, that's exactly what they've been looking for, is that opportunity to say, like, look what monsters these people are, yeah. You know, and that's not who we are. Right?
Yeah, it was very embarrassing.
It's terrible. And it's not who we are. It's not who 99% of gamers are, or even more. You know, it's not who most people are who play games. Most people who play games are decent people, just like people who watch movies or whatever, right? Like, it's not as though being a gamer makes you, you know, an asshole. So, yeah.
I'm just reeling. I'm reeling about the article saying how Leigh Alexander's article about Long Dark was your favorite and not mine. But, you know, that's whatever. You know, I'm cool.
Yours was awesome too, man. Yours was awesome too. But, you know, I picked that out. That was my way of showing support for Leigh Alexander.
She's very talented.
Yeah, she is. And I like, you know, I don't always agree with her. It doesn't mean that I have to, like, you know, attack her because I don't agree with her. That's the thing that I think is so, you know, and I'm sure there are a lot of reasons for why this is, but it seems really hard for people to kind of like acknowledge that they can disagree with someone without like thinking that person's an idiot or hating that person. Yeah. You know, it's like, I can disagree with you on a point and we can have a conversation about it and we can still be friends, you know, just because we have different opinions on things doesn't mean we can't still, you know, have a connection to each other. Certainly doesn't mean we have to be at war with each other.
Exactly. We're all in this together.
We're all in this together, man.